And sometimes people do see the real thing. But it's quite possible the entities that appeared to him created a thought form to manifest through, to communicate
like Moses
with,
and Elijah.
To communicate with them in a way that he could understand. But now, some thought forms are actual true communications. I'll go through a couple of things that I think are fairly true communications. Most channeling that's done by unconscious channelers, according to the DK, and I agree, are distortions. And they're from thought forms. They do not give pertinent new information. And almost all of these that I've read are that's accurate. There's one that kind of stands out from the rest. And one of the things that impressed me about it is it doesn't claim to contact the master, but merely a fairly high entity that's in the other world. And that is the writings of Seth.
Yes.
Seth Speaks. Has anyone
read
Seth writings?
Yeah.
They're of a very high order for, they're the highest ones, I'd say, from an unconscious channel. But she didn't claim to contact some master. And Seth, on the other side, didn't claim to be a master. He claimed to be he's pretty much an intellectual that was had an understanding of the other side that just wanted to communicate it with her. And he communicated some pretty good information and quite a number of things that isn't found anywhere else. So I think that's a true communication, but it's not infallible because, for one thing, it's not from a master. It's from a very high intellectual person that's on the other side. Okay, so that's only unconscious channeler that I've read that I've really, been impressed with. The highest revelations are through mental telepathy. Now, those that are in the LDS Church, this is the way Joseph Smith received his revelations. He was not an unconscious channeler. He was a conscious channeler. He was totally awake. He was not in some trance state. And he received that inner voice and had written down by a scribe what the inner voice said to him. And that's how the revelations come. What other revelations have come by that method?
Edgar Cayce?
No, Edgar Cayce was a trance channeler. He was in a deep trance.
Okay.
And when he woke up, he couldn't remember anything he said. But that's another one, in addition to the
Seth.
He came up with some pretty good stuff, but he was far from infallible. He said that Atlantis was going to rise in the ocean. I think in 1968 or something like that. So he was way off on a couple of predictions he made. But he was right on quite a few things. And he received thousands of, in the trance state, thousands of transmissions that told people how to heal themselves, what herbs to take. And many people received a lot of benefit physically by taking the medicines that he prescribed from the trance state. So he was getting true information from some source, probably from his soul that was transmitting it to him at the time. He was sincere about it. So I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, Michael?
I think Rudolf Steiner has gotten through some pretty clear stuff. He did a lot.
He didn't go in the trance state, though, did he?
I don't think so.
I think he was a conscious channel.
But what he's done with, like, Waldorf schools, Waldorf education, and biodynamic gardening, and he's a pretty profound writer. I mean, we've read some of his stuff, and I think it's on. It's just like I'm not in that stream, so it doesn't.
Some of the stuff he got about other planets, I don't think is correct, but. I think he did get a lot of stuff. I think he tuned into his intuition to the best of his ability, and got a lot of good stuff and made some errors, but I think he's worth studying.
Yeah.
And then he's one of those guys where you, when you read it, if it speaks to your soul, accept it. If it doesn't, well, put it on the shelf. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd say, okay, anybody else that receives a transmission through mental telepathy? Yeah.
So my the same friend that had the meeting with heard Jesus' voice.
Who?
So my friend who passed away, he was a mentor of mine for a while, Scott Warner. He also wrote a book called The 24 Strands of DNA. And there's parts where it shows Saint Germain talking to him, and he just writes it down. I think he was conscious when he wrote it, so, but it's not his writing.
Okay.
What about Alice A. Bailey?
Yeah. Right, Alice A. Bailey received all of hers through mental telepathy. And first of all, she wrote 24 books altogether, if I remember right. And first of all, when she started transmitting, she would actually hear the actual words and write down the actual words. But as their minds become in sync over the years, they worked for how many years was it? 25 years or so. And near the end, her mind was so in sync with his that she didn't have to hear the actual words. She could just pick up his thoughts and write it down. And she said they would sometimes argue back and forth about how to write that down most accurately. He complained a little bit about her. He said her mind isn't very scientific. So sometimes it's very difficult to describe through her breath vocabulary what I want to say.
And she described him as stilted.
As what?
Stilted.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not quite sure what that means, but it's like, yeah, it's kind of hard to communicate with. He's a little bit old stuffy. Yeah.
JJ, what about the raw material? RA.
Okay, we'll get to that next. But, they kind of argued back and forth, but overall, the quality of the writing is, I haven't seen anything superior to the writings through Alice A. Bailey. Now, Madame Blavatsky, she put everything in her own words, but she got inspiration from the hierarchy, but then she put it in her own words, and the masters would actually transmit to her quotes, because she was writing back in the 1870s or so. So she was kind of making a breakthrough in esoteric writings. And so what they wanted her to do was to supply a lot of backup material. So she received transmission just intuitively, and then they would send her all kinds of quotes to put in her books. And everybody wonders, where in the world did she get all these quotes? Because she didn't have a very big library. And one of the guys I was working with is an interesting story. She quoted Alfred Lord Tennyson. And this guy that was working with her, one of her assistants, was an expert on Alfred Lord Tennyson. He had read everything that Alfred Lord Tennyson had ever written. And he says, sorry, Miss Blavatsky, but I don't think Alfred Lord Tennyson said that. And she said, no, yes, he did. He wrote, can you give me an idea? And she wrote down a reference, and he'd never heard of that reference. So they were in London at the time, and there was a library section dedicated to Alfred Lord Tennyson, and there were some experts there. So he went there and asked them if they'd ever heard of this quote, and nobody had heard of it. And he searched through everything he could, because he was a disciple, and he didn't want to be have his beliefs crushed about Madame Blavatsky. So he kept searching, And finally, one of the experts here says there's some early writings of his that we haven't filed that not very many people are aware of. You can check with them. And she found a poem he wrote when he was a teenager. And the reason he didn't think it was Alfred Lord Tennyson, because it didn't sound like his regular script, but it was a poem he wrote when he was a teenager. And he finally found it, and it was an exact match.
Wow.
So that was an interesting testimony that the masters were really transmitting her references for the books that she wrote. So she received it by inspiration, but she put everything in her own language. And
the story sometimes goes that she would see the words projected on the wall.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, another one is Course in Miracles. That's all we see through Mendel collectively, no trance state. Helen Shuckman was a psychiatrist working at a major university, I can't remember the name, Stanford, I think it was, but I'm not sure. And she was working with a close associate, and she was trying to be good in a field. She was a Jew and leaned toward being an atheist. And one day she heard this voice, and the voice said, "This is a Course in Miracles. Please take notes." And she thought, "What's going on here? I don't even believe in this stuff." And so she goes to her associate and she says, "I think I'm going crazy." She says, "Why?" "Well, I heard this voice. It said, 'This is the Course in Miracles. Please take notes.'" And he says, "Well, why don't you take the notes, see what's says?" He says, "Okay." So she took the notes, and she gives it to him the next day, and he says, "Boy, this is pretty good stuff. Why don't you keep taking the notes, let's see what else comes through." And so they worked for 7 years to bring what is now called A Course in Miracles. And it's pretty impressive course.
Her husband never read it, and he always referred to it as Helen's book.
What's that?
Her husband never read it, but he always referred to it as, "Oh, it's Helen's book."
Oh, yeah. Her husband wasn't really a believer, and she wasn't that big of a believer herself. Right in the middle of the transmission, she says, "Why did you pick me to do this? I don't even want to do it, and I'm not even a big believer." And the voice says, "Because I knew you would do it." And so
I heard Marianne Williams tell that story. I went to one of her talks. She told that whole story about that.
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
Hey, JJ, what do you think the possibility that voice was in a few other people's heads before it went to Helen's head, and they just wrote it off as, a voice in their head?
Quite possible, but the voice was definitely represented an entity of very high intelligence, so he probably knew who to pick, would be my guess. Because it's whoever wrote A Course in Miracles was a person of high intelligence. I have a theory that it may be somebody who's never even incarnated. Because remember the story of the prodigal son? The son that stayed home was kind of irritated at the one that left, and A Course in Miracles kind of presents the idea that just we need to come back home, forget everything here and come home. And so it almost sounds like it was written by somebody that the brother that stayed home, you know. I haven't got a witness that it was from Christ or Jesus, either one, but I haven't got that vibration from it, but I do get the vibration that there's a lot of truth in it, and it's a very high entity.
That is hilarious, though.
What's that?
If that is all true, and they somehow, the one of the ones who didn't participate in this section,
yeah,
you know, of the rebels that broke up and are doing what we're doing,
yeah,
and they broke through and got that message through the Course of Rebels, yeah, that is funny. That is funny.
Yeah. So
that's like, so they broke through and sent in a secret little message, and they're trying to ruin our plan.
That's entirely possible. Well, I've considered that myself, because A Course in Miracles kind of presents the idea that this is a waste of time coming down. You know. And most of the esoteric writings say it's not a waste of time at all. Tibet says we're learning a lot, expanding. The revelations of Joseph Smith says the same thing. But A Course in Miracles just presents the idea.
That sounds like the irritated, jealous big brother that stayed there.
Yeah.
That does.
Yeah. Quite possible. Now, if you present, I have never presented that idea to the Course in Miracles group, because they would probably excommunicate me if I said that.
JJ, how about The Initiate? Have you ever read that?
I think I have, but it's been a really long time ago. Who wrote that? Was that Davis? Somebody Davis?
It was Cyril Scott. When I first got it, it was anonymous. The author was...
No, it might be a different one than I'm thinking. There's a couple of books called The Initiate.
Yeah, eventually it was Cyril Scott, and I'd say that's the book that really put me on the path.
Hmm. What's the story behind that, Susan?
He'll tell you. He knows it better.
The first part is just a collection of short stories with this guy under the pseudonym of Justin Warward Haig, and this guy who met him, and it's just, here's a very advanced being that has the ability to read past lives, see auras, and know, and so it's these interactions with people. I mean, when I asked my friend, said, you need to read this, I said, what's it about? And he stopped for a minute, and he says, you'll just have to read it. Applied spirituality, first place I ever heard science of the soul mentioned.
Oh yeah? Okay, now I was going to ask about the raw material. I read all the raw books and about them. What I look for, you know, first thing I look for in these channel materials, if it looks like it's the material is fairly advanced, and the raw had some interesting thoughts in, so the first thing I look for, do they make any prophecies that do not come true? And almost all of them do. For instance, the raw material says that in 2012, which everybody was expecting something big to happen, that the earth would be transmuted into the fourth dimension. And the fourth dimension is a lot different than where we are right now. And nothing happened. Matter of fact, I was one of the few, and had recordings of me several years before 2012 telling everybody that 2012 would be no different than 2011. That's what I said several times. I'm one of the few that made an accurate prediction about that. Yeah.
That's what I said. People would ask me about these things, and I said, you won't notice the difference.
Yeah. It's a true prophet also there. So that's what's one of the first things I looked at, and I read the raw material, one book or so of it a long time ago, before 2012. Then somebody brought it up in the group, and so I downloaded all the material, went all the way through it. And there's that particular prophecy was a big deal with them, and they don't talk about it anymore, the raw believers. I don't know if they've erased it from their text or not,